Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Forest of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way, and I am your host, Mary O'Malley. And today we're exploring your dear friend pain. You may be going, huh? Your friend pain? Isn't pain just yuck? But maybe, just maybe, it's our relationship with pain that all the yuck comes from. So, let's explore. First, what am I talking about when I say pain? And if you look up the definition, it talks about physical sensations in our body. But pain is so much more than that. Besides painful sensations, we have painful feelings, painful thoughts, painful memories. And what do we do with all of this pain? We try to get away from it. And really, doesn't that make sense? Yeah, you should try to get away from pain, and then everything will finally be okay. Well, maybe, just maybe, that's not true. So, let's explore how we got into this trap that getting away from pain will release us from pain. And first, all of us journeyed through childhood, and we took on great insecurities and deeply hidden wounds for all of us. We were little people in a land of unconscious giants, and all of us experienced trauma, some more than others. And as we were growing up, inside of us, we made what Eckhart Tolle calls the mind-made me. In other words, our mind made a me. And before that began happening, we didn't know if we were a boy or a girl. We didn't know if we were good or bad. You know, we didn't know our name. But slowly and surely, this me took over. And it talks in our head all day long. If you step back and you could listen to it on a loudspeaker, you would see that it's really focused on itself. Me, 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 me. Talking, talking, talking all day long. You would also see that it likes this, but it doesn't like that. It thinks this is good, this is bad, this is right, that is wrong. And if you watch carefully, you'll see it has two main movements. The first is always trying to get to the so-called good stuff. Oh, if only I won the lottery. Or if I lost weight and then I could get into my bathing suit. or, oh God, if only I met my soulmate, then everything would finally be okay. What we fail to see is that this if only is endless. It's like trying to fill up a hole that has a hole in the bottom of it. Whatever we finally get, it's not enough. It is never, ever enough. When I turned on the TV last night, there was a blurb on the news about one of the actresses on the Beverly Hills Housewives whose husband had embezzled a lot of money in order to try to keep up their lifestyle. And that's what we'll do. The mind will do, you know, really weird and corrupt things in order to try to keep on getting what it thinks will bring it happiness. And on this news clip, they showed their house along with her closet with dozens and dozens and dozens of shoes and bags and seemingly endless racks of clothing. And what we don't see is this is all emptiness. Anything we can grab a hold of in life will eventually fade away. Have you seen those older women who have had so many plastic surgeries they look weird? Or you buy a new car and the new smell eventually goes away and the car gets dented and scratched. Or you lose the weight and buy new clothes only to gain more weight. There's a story that Stephen Levine talks about that really, really highlights this so well. And it begins with a fellow who dies and leaving his body, finds himself in a glistening realm, standing in the midst of shining flowers and an iridescent sky. He looks about and thinks, oh, wow, I was better than I thought. I've gone to heaven. How about that? But I need a place to live. And with that thought, his dream house materializes a few feet away. As he approaches the door, it swings open to reveal the decor that he has always, always wished to live in. Sitting down on a perfectly comfortable couch, he looks about at this perfectly beautiful house and thinks, oh, I'd really like something to eat. Just as one of the living room walls slides back then, and it reveals shelves filled with all of his favorite dishes prepared just the way he likes them. Sitting there, musing and bemused by his surroundings, he thinks, oh, I'd sure like to hear some great music right now. And at that very moment, his favorite Bach toccata exudes from the walls. Wow, this is so great, he says. This is what I've always wanted. Hanging out in this luxurious space for a few days, he feels so relaxed and comfortable, and he thinks this is really nice, but I really like somebody to share it with. And instantly, there becomes a knock on the door, and the door swings open, and standing there is his perfect sexual, intellectual, emotional, spiritual partner. Come right in, he says, and there they are, living out their desires week after week. One after another of his desires materializes the moment he wishes for them. But after about 6 months, he notices, though he is getting all he wants, he doesn't really feel more fulfilled in any deeper sense. And he notices that his mind still holds a lot of fear. He recognizes that if all this would disappear, he would be devastated. Noticing how attached he's become to all this luxury, he thought, I've always imagined if I only could get what I want, I'd be happy. But how can I be happy if I depend so much on what is given to create my happiness? How can I depend so much on external conditions for my peace of mind? All this gratification isn't really making me any lighter, any wiser, any quieter. There is less stress from not getting what I want, but there really is not any more peace. Another couple of ice cream sodas, another couple of love makings, and after a month or so, he starts to question whether this is really very useful for him. None of this has taken him beyond his desires. He has not in the least dealt with that place within him that only feels comfortable when it gets what it wants. He has not touched the yearning, the root that had made life such pain at times. In fact, he feels as though he's feeding this root by the escalation of his desires. As he begins to wonder if there might not be some place in the universe where he could work more deeply on the latent fears and the separateness that have always caused him so much difficulty, he goes to the head man and says, "I don't mean to sound so ungrateful, and this may even sound preposterous, but I think I'd rather transfer to hell." The head man turns slowly to him and says, "And where do you think you are?" Oh my God, the first time I heard that story, it was just, wow. It was like a bucket of ice water was poured over me. It just, for a few moments, broke that spell inside of me that if I could just get what I want, then everything would have actually finally be what I want it to be. But I see that happiness is not bought. Happiness is our very nature. It's our very nature. And it comes from the letting go of what causes suffering. It comes from those who dive deeply into life, into the investigation of life itself. Wow. Such a powerful, powerful story. And what it's saying is that the so-called treasures of life, the money, the cars, the perfect mate, well, there's no such thing, a beautiful house, a great job, great sex, that this will bring us the lasting satisfaction we long for, that comes when we learn how to unhook from the endless struggles in our mind. You can see the second movement of your mind as you become fascinated by what it is talking about all day long. It is always trying to get away from the unpleasant. We just talked about going to the pleasant. Now we're going to be exploring the unpleasant. This is the main movement we're exploring today. Our minds believe if we just get rid of what we don't like, then finally we'll feel okay. But resistance to life is hell. The pushing away of what is happening in this moment cuts us off from an intimate, alive, nourishing connection with life, which is what we really long for. Resistance is so isolating and so fear-engendering, oftentimes leading us into helplessness and hopelessness. And yet, this is what we're doing all day long. It's like we're living in a locked room with a gigantic game of whack-a-mole. If you've ever played or just seen a game of whack-a-mole, it's a big box with five holes, and a mole pops up out of the holes, and you know, one at a time, and then you have to hit it down with a mallet. But as the game progresses, the moles pop up faster and faster until a number of them all show up at the same time. At that point, it's just a frenzy. But that's oftentimes what it's like in our minds, desperately trying to get rid of what we don't like. And then there is a moment where everything has been bashed down, all the moles, and we finally breathe a sigh of relief, only to have a mole pop up again. What we want is to discover we don't need to play this game. So let's get to know this game of whack-a-mole in our minds and how to play the game of life differently. The first step is to see that this desire to resist what we don't like and try to get to what we do is all about wanting things to be different than what they are. And this only creates suffering. We were taught from a very early age to move away from what is unpleasant. But the more we resist, the more we contract, and the more we contract, the more we suffer. If you doubt that, watch the next time something unpleasant comes your way, something small like an itchy rash or a slightly sprained ankle or a sore in your mouth, and then watch your mind as it tries to figure out how to get away from this experience. Oh, I don't like this. I don't want to experience this. How can I stop this? What are we doing there? We are turning away from ourselves. And this struggling with what is tightens you. It tightens your body. This is so important to see. You hold on to your breath. You raise your shoulders. You clench your jaw. You have a knot in your stomach. It also tightens your mind and heart. We often get lost in fear and judgment and then blame not only others but ourselves. Oh, why me? When will this end? What did I do wrong? That's all the game of struggle, the game of whack-a-mole that we have been trained in. And when all this struggling doesn't bring us the peace we long for, we turn further away from ourselves into our compulsions, which can range all the way from busyness to heroin. We go to our compulsions to try to numb the pain. The sad thing is, this does work in the short run. Just think of the last time you had a whole lot of liquor or endlessly ate or had a day of frenzy of trying to get everything crossed off your to-do list, and you will see what I mean. After a while, you didn't feel a thing until you experienced the hangover of too much busyness, too much food, too much liquor. And in the long run, all this does is lead to more pain. So what we're doing is exploring some really core truths. The first is that turning away from the unpleasant only creates more unpleasantness. The second is that resisting what we are experiencing only amplifies our pain, physically, mentally, emotionally. And the third and most important truth, whenever we're trying to get away from what we don't like, in other words, whatever is hurting, a broken leg, an achy back, a wave of sadness, a feeling of unworthiness, a sense of agitation, a tight band of anxiousness across our chest, we abandon what we are experiencing for our addiction to resistance and turning away from ourselves. This is such an important point. When we resist what we are experiencing, we abandon what we are experiencing, leaving it all on its own as we try to get further and further away from it. Oh, that just creates such pain in our lives. And this is the nature of the human experience right now. Is it possible to unhook from this world of struggle and be with life exactly as it is, even the painful times, so we can give our pain the accepting attention it needs in order to let go? Yes, absolutely yes. So the question is, how do we create the kind of relationship with pain where pain not only doesn't control us, but it becomes our guide out of the seemingly locked whack-a-mole room of struggle? This kind of relationship is learning how to use pain as your teacher. Pain is not an accident. It is life alerting us to something that needs our attention. So we have been already exploring the first step, and that is to see that when pain is here, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional, we resist, we turn away, we leave ourselves, trying to get as far away from the pain as we can. The second is to see that when we turn away, we tighten, actually increasing the pain. So much of the holding in our body comes from this resistance to the unpleasant in our life. Headaches, backaches, jaw aches, stomach aches. You have a difficult day at work, and you end up with a tension headache. You lose a loved one to COVID, and when somebody asks how you're doing, you say fine, and yet there's a constant lump in your throat. You are rejected by your partner, and there's a tight band across your chest. If this isn't ringing true to you yet, watch the next time you're in pain. Start with physical pain, because it's harder in the beginning to see this with mental and emotional pain. Maybe you have a paper cut where you stub your toe. Watch how you tighten, you resist, and you turn away from yourself. turn away from that experience. You're nowhere near that experience. Your attention is caught in the whack-a-mole game in your mind as you try to get away from the unpleasantness of this pain. What I'm offering here is the art of turning towards ourselves when we're in pain. Actually, being present for our pain is where lasting healing is. I'm going to say that again. Being present for our pain is where lasting healing is. Yes, pain is distressing, it can be disabling, and irritatingly persistent. So why would we actually want to be with it? Because science is beginning to understand that most of our pain is our resistance to our pain. Just imagine spraining your wrist and somebody comes along and grips your wrist and doesn't let it go. My God, that would make your wrist hurt a lot more. But that's what we do with our pain. We tighten down around it, and that resistance amplifies our pain. And we do this not only with our physical pain, but our mental and emotional pain. But pain can become your dearest friend. It can alert you when you're resisting life again. And it can remind you that pain is amplified when you pull away from it. It can show you even a few moments of being present for your pain and softening around it can make a huge difference in your experience of the pain. And discovering how to soften around the place you tight and resist, you can begin to see the doorway out of the room of struggle, out of the whack-a-mole room that we've all been trained in. This turning towards our pain is all about befriending it. If you're honest with yourself, you will see that you leave yourself when you most need yourself. Turning towards yourself when you are in pain rather than turning away is the art of compassionately observing what you are experiencing, including your resistance to experiencing what you are experiencing. So, what does it look like to be curious and investigate your pain and your resistance to it if that's what your main experience is? So you can slowly learn how to befriend it. Just acknowledging that you're resisting is an important step. And then acknowledging that you're tightening. That's what I call becoming a tightness detective. It's just amazing to me, even when I watch TV now, you know, especially since I'm dealing with a lot in my life, you know, it's just amazing to me that something will happen on the TV and my stomach will tighten or my neck will tighten. You know, I was sitting quietly on the porch this morning, you know, drinking my morning cup of broth and just opening to nature. And then all of a sudden I noticed that one of my hands were clenched. We have been trained to resist life. But that in that acknowledgement, that is a moment of consciousness. That's a moment of going towards. And that's a moment of seeing that you're holding your breath or you're clenching your jaw or you have sharp pains in your stomach. That may not seem like a lot, but that is. You've turned the corner and you're on the journey home. Then when you notice you're tightening and you're resisting, the next step is to soften everything. And the best way to do that is with your breath. You know, we've talked a lot about breath and you know, in these shows, but it is so amazing, one of the most powerful, quickest ways that you can turn on the calming aspect of your nervous system is with your breath. And I've talked a lot about the long, slow out breath because people are told to, you know, okay, breathe deeply, and they go around and go, you know, and they do that for a few breaths. They say, oh, God, this takes too much effort. But we begin to access that long, slow out-breath. And this begins to massage the vagus nerve, which is the key to turning on the calming aspect of our nervous system, to turn down the fight or fright. Oh, I don't know what I would do without the long, slow out-breath. Then, and sometimes that's all you can do. You just notice you're caught, you notice what's holding, and you begin to soften it. But then it's learning how to bring your attention out of your resistant mind and actually investigate what you are resisting. And it's best to learn this with the sensations in your body. It takes a while to do this with your emotions and your thoughts. But this is where, you know, that you're waiting for the doctor and you all of a sudden wake up and you notice that you're hardly breathing and that, you know, your brow is furrowed and even your feet are clenched, you know, and you know, and then you begin to soften that with your long, slow out breath. And then, and somebody says all you can do, but more and more you'll be able to actually bring your attention to what is holding on in your body. And let's say it's your stomach, and you bring your attention there, and you say, how big is this holding, and does it move around, or does it stay in the same place, does it come and go, does it throb or its pulse? These questions, you're not really there to try to figure it out, you know, about how big it is and what shape it is and all that. You're using these questions to ground your attention there, because attention heals. And that pain, whatever it is, whether it's a cramp in your foot or an itch on your face, an irritating itch, it needs, it longs for the light of your own attention. What we're talking about here is a direct participation with life as it is. What a novel idea. Most of us don't do that. Most of us just think about our lives. We are exploring how to be more intimate with ourselves. Very scary in the beginning, but that's why I give it step by step. We're exploring how you can be more honest with yourself. And it just, tears come when I say that, because it's just such a relief to finally bring the attention out of the stories in your head and actually be honest with what you are experiencing. It's such a relief. And this ability to give our attention to what we formerly have turned away from is what Rumi calls true alchemy, in that line I've talked about many times in the second half of the Guest House, his most famous poem. And most people don't read the second half, but this line speaks the truth, oh God, of what we're exploring here. True alchemy begins, my God, I can't remember it. If it comes back, I will share it, but it's just popped out of my mind right now. Trying to find it, but it's not there, so I'm going to let it go. What he talks about in that quote is that when you can accept the difficulties you've been given, the door opens. And for years, I thought it was a door, but it's the door. It's the door out of the seemingly locked whack-a-mole room of our mind. And I was talking with a woman the other day, and who had had to leave because she lost her job, and she had to move in with family, and you know, and this was very difficult for her. And we were working together, and one day she was saying, "Oh my God, there's just so much physical pain right now. My body is not used to this new environment and this new rhythm and the new patterns of living. But there's also emotional, mental pain." And I find, Mary, that when I soften around the pain at whatever level it is, it moves through me much more quickly. So, as you strengthen your muscle of curiosity, investigating painful sensations. This will help you in discovering how to be with painful feelings and thoughts. So far, what we've explored is just noticing how you are resisting and how to soften with your breath, and then how to bring your attention into what you are actually experiencing. And there's a few other steps, but I want you to really stay grounded in these steps for a while, because you're developing the muscle of your ability to turn towards and be curious, because it takes time. We have made into monsters all the feelings that we had to bury deep inside of us when we were young. But all they are is little children in monster costumes. That includes your anger, your shame, your helplessness, your hopelessness, your despair. So we're now adding this next step of how to be with these emotions and how to be with the stories that come with them. And I want to give you the example out of my life. Many of you know I've been dealing with a rare form of blood cancer and will be on chemotherapy the rest of my life. And I just had my third spine surgery because I was in a head-on automobile accident in my early 20s. Needless to say, there's a lot of pain in my body, but also in my mind. It hates the side effects of chemo, and it spins all sorts of stories of what it's going to be like to live with chemo forever. Notice that, you know, word, forever. That's the mind, you know, underlying forever. And then, oh, what about the deep fatigue that comes with all the medicine and also with the cancer? So sometimes all I can do is acknowledge my mind is struggling and then bring my attention back to the sanctuary of my breath. And oh my God, you know, waiting for the surgery in the early morning hours and the mind is starting to get anxious, and then back to the breath, to the sanctuary, to the calm that it brings. And then waking up in the middle of the night, you know, when I first found out about the cancer and that I had to be, on chemo the rest of my life, you know, and just acknowledging, you know, here I am, I'm coming out of the fogginess, and then there's, you know, the mind, and the mind is trying to figure out how to get out of all this, you know, and then I come back. I notice that I'm caught in my mind, and I pull my attention out of that world and ground it back in reality, ground it back in the know through noticing my breath. And, of course, with all of this, my mind just wants it all to go away, and the urge to turn away is so very strong at times, but I've watched the storyteller in my head for long enough that I know that turning away only leads to more suffering. And when I'm really caught, you know, and it, you know, dealing with the side effects of anesthesia, and then oh my God, it felt like they broke a rib. They didn't break a rib, but for this kind of surgery, you're on your stomach, and I don't know, they must have pressed down a lot, because my lower ribs on the side of my surgery, oh my God, you know, it didn't hurt to breathe just a normal everyday breath, but anything deeper than that hurt like bloody hell, because I was breathing down, you know, into those ribs, and, you know, waking up and not having difficulty breathing, and you know, having the headache from the anesthesia, and you know, and dealing with the fatigue from the cancer. Oh my God. And my mind tries to figure its way out. And that's when I asked the question, I think I explored it in the last show, without changing anything, notice what is here. I think in the last show I said, without changing anything, notice what is. But that's kind of a little abstract. And so it's morphed into, for me, without changing anything, notice what is here. And this is magic, because it's just, it's like turning on a light in the middle of the whack-a-mole room, you know, and I step out of that room. I step out of the world of struggle. Then I can remember my breath. And of course, then I bring it down, you know, into my belly, you know, well, I couldn't do it that night because of my ribs, but mostly usually I bring it all the way down into my belly because there's so much support in our bellies. And I was thinking the other day, I need to do a whole show on bellies. But sometimes all I can do is bring my attention back to my breath for a few moments before the mind takes over again. But those moments matter, and then it's back into the whack-a-mole room of struggle, you know, and then it's, okay, wait, what's here? Oh, the mind is struggling again, and then that gives me the wherewithal to pull my attention out of the struggling mind and bring it back into my body, into the sanctuary of the breath. And these types of moments accumulate. It is possible to see it. Then it's possible to see and give my attention to what my mind was resisting. I can't always do this, but you know, this is becoming, you know, more and more accomplished just because I'm dealing with so much right now. And so whether it's fatigue or the pain in my ribs or the overall feeling of yuck that comes from this kind of blood cancer, to give it my attention, oh my God, to not turn away, to actually be present for what my mind deems the unpleasant. Oh, the joy of that, you know. And this pathway, you know, this is what happens for all of us. It's just like we didn't learn how to walk right away, you know. Slowly and surely we clear that, you know, very faint deer trail into a pathway and then into a one-lane country road and then to a highway. And mine's a six-lane freeway now. It is just absolutely fascinating to be fascinated about how much my mind resists what it deems the unpleasant, and then to actually be with the unpleasantness. Then comes the place of deep healing, where the clouds have cleared enough, you know, with stepping out of the whack-a-mole room and coming to my breath and softening around what I was experiencing, I can actually feel my heart again. One of my most favorite quotes from Stephen Levine is, "Can you keep your heart open in hell?" Oh boy, I'm having a lot of practice about that. Because true healing is all about coming home to your heart. And your pain needs your heart. But we stay in our busy resistance, denying, fixing mind, and all the while our pain is asking for our heart. Oh, the joy of experiencing, fully experiencing what my mind was trying to get away from and actually flooding it with kindness. What happens when you do that? You soften. Your muscles and ligaments and nerves relax. It's just like what happens when you're going into a meeting with somebody in management, and every time before these meetings have only created more stress because you feel unseen, unheard, unaccepted. And then in this meeting, you are met, you are understood, you are supported. Your whole being would relax. That is what our pain needs. It needs us to relax around it. It needs us to listen to it. It needs us to say hello to it, to let it know it's okay that it's here, that you want to get to know more about it. Oh, the joy when my heart is open again to my pain, especially in the middle of the night. There is another wonderful shift that happens when your breath calms the clouds in your mind and you realize you're not alone. And that is, your heart opens to everybody else that is feeling the same pain that you are. Oh my God, what an amazing, you know, just like Mach speed, going from a tight ball to resistance to become as spacious as the universe. Because no matter whatever pain you are experiencing, no matter whatever pain, there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are feeling the same pain at that moment. I can't always access this place, but when I do, oh, it is just pure joy. Early on in this journey of opening my heart, when my mind was really resistant to actually experiencing what I was experiencing, I would remind it of all the children that at that moment were experiencing the same thing I was. And I would ask my mind if we could meet it for these children. And that usually dissolved, not always, but that usually dissolved the resistance to being present for my own pain. You can do this with sleeplessness. If you're awake in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep, and maybe you have a big day at work tomorrow and your mind is whirling and spinning and you're just playing whack-a-mole over and over again, no, there are millions of people that are experiencing the same thing right now all over the world. Or maybe it's the agony of rejection. Can you feel the softening that would happen when you realize that you are not the only person feeling the pain of rejection in that moment? What about fear of the future, whether it's a medical diagnosis or a financial crisis? When my children were so ill and I spent a lot of time in hospitals, I would close my eyes and find my breath and then connect my heart with all the other people in that hospital at that moment. People that were very ill or dying or waiting to hear what was going on in their body, or their loved ones that were, you know, going through a heck of a lot. Or maybe you're experiencing debilitating anger. Just feel what it would be like if you realize there are millions of other people, men and women, who are overtaken by anger in that moment. Or let's say you had a fight with your significant other and your mind is just reeling and your heart opens because you know you're not alone. This is all about training in the phenomenal healing power of tenderness. The more I discover the joy of tenderness, not only for myself and for my resistance and for my pains, but also for others, the more the walls of the whack-a-mole room dissolve. I only experienced it as a locked room when I was caught in my mind. But it's never locked. We just think it is. And what is outside of that room is who we truly are. So this is the novel idea I am offering you. Pain can turn from a danger signal, one that takes you more deeply into the world of struggle, or it can teach you. It can open you. It can bring you into a more trust-filled connection with life. And every time you respond to a painful experience, you are regrooving new neural pathways in your brain. And just like strengthening your muscles for a marathon, you can regroove your brain, moving it from the almost continuous fight or flight we experience when we live in the whack-a-mole room into the ease and peace that is our natural state. Now, this is so scary in the beginning. We are so deeply trained in reaction. And we have made pain our enemy. So start small. Don't go with a big thing. Start with a buzzing fly in the room where you're trying to meditate, or the pain of a paper cut. or the impatience of waiting for a doctor. Become a tinnitus detective. Become more alert to when your body is tightening, because when your body is tightening, you are playing whack-a-mole. And just that acknowledgement, even if you go right back into it, that is a moment of consciousness. That is a moment of relating to what you are experiencing rather than being lost in it. And then if you can, soften, use your breath. Ground in your breath. Soften. Even if you have to just really tighten every single muscle you can find on your in-breath, and then slowly let it go on the out-breath. And more, then be fascinated. Go and explore what it's like in your body when the fly won't leave the room or your mind is irritated by the paper cut. Now, this can be too intimate to begin with for some people. It was for me. You know, I was so far away from myself, far away from myself. And the whole idea of coming back to myself because, you know, my, you know, whack-a-mole room believed that I was a piece of shit and, you know, and any feeling I had was danger, and that I was bad and wrong. Oh, my God. And so I had to start just with sensations and that weren't even sensations with something that was unpleasant. You know, in fact, I started when I wake up in the morning before I got out of bed, I trained myself to begin to notice three different sensations. Not sensations that are, connected with any pain. Just, a cold foot, the weight of my body, where it touched the bed and where it didn't touch the bed. The warmth of my breath on the skin right below my nostrils. And slowly and surely, oh my God, much more slowly than I wanted it, but remember, I was really, truly scared out of life. I began to groove a pathway back into life. And this is the beginning stage of training in the art of being present for yourself, no matter what is here. As you strengthen the muscle of your curiosity, deepening your ability to go towards what you are, your mind is resisting rather than turning away, and you experience a big reaction, like a fight with a loved one or an escape to your compulsion, which you haven't been doing for a while, or you made a huge mistake at work, or you got a kidney stone, you can really, truly train enough that you don't have to leave yourself. Like what's happening for me, you know, I mean, God, chemo, and there's one of my children is having a really big, hard time, and, you know, back surgery, and so on and so forth. Do I leave myself? Yeah. But I come back fairly quickly. And so you can slowly and surely develop this capacity over time, just like training for a marathon. And one of the ways, if you're really in a really big reaction like we just talked about, you can come back to yourself after the fact. There's no wrong time. Let's say you've just had a huge fight with your, you know, partner and they've stormed out and you're laying on your bed and all of a sudden you go, oh, I'm in the whack-a-mole room. Okay. And then you begin to notice that you're resisting what you're experiencing. You begin to notice what is tight. You begin to bring your breath, you use your breath to calm things down, and you bring your attention into what you are experiencing. You can learn from every single challenge you will ever have. And it is amazing to know how much you can retrain your brain. We really can. So isn't it amazing to realize that pain, which includes truly difficult challenges in our lives, can teach us to soften and open again into life. It teaches us how to investigate what we are experiencing rather than falling into it or trying to get away. The more you investigate, the more you see that the game of whack-a-mole, which your mind likes to endlessly play, is just a game. And right outside this seemingly locked room of our minds, of the whack-a-mole room, is a freedom that most people never know because our conditioning to resist life is so strong. So what I am inviting you into is rather than spending your life trying to make yourself be better or different than what you are, and yourself and your life, and endlessly resisting what you don't like and trying to hold on to what you do, discover how to directly participate in your life. Not just think about it, but actually directly participate. And this is what pain can do for you. It's your teacher in this because it shows you that resistance only leads to more suffering, and going towards slowly and surely is where you set yourself free from the game of whack-a-mole. This is all about being present with life as it presents itself. Then you discover something very amazing, that everything you want and need and everything you have ever truly longed for, like peace and joy and love, is always right here. Always. As you learn how to soften around pain, being curious about what it's like and touching it with your heart, you become like an ice cube melting into this moment. You become lighter, more spacious, and more at home in your world. So I want to leave you with a very, one of my favorite stories from Stephen Levine, and I've shared it before, and I'm not going to share the whole thing, but it's basically the story of the he was in his 30s, and he was a virtuoso guitarist and dancer, and had two young kids, and was married, and got ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is where the body slowly freezes into a statue, you know, and he talks about this whole experience about ALS. And I just want to read to you what Stephen wrote about talking with this young man. And he says, and his name is Aaron, "It seems to me that people's lives become such an oddity. So much time is spent polishing the personality, strengthening the body, honing and even having pride in the separateness, the competitiveness, and the painfulness. No one seems to play lightly with life, nor did I. Everybody makes it such a serious business." And that's what I'm calling the whack-a-mole game. "But now I can't involve myself in that serious business anymore. I'm not this body. My body is rotting off its skeleton. Even so, my heart has never been so open. And I have never felt so much love for so many beings. It's not even feeling love for other beings. I just feel love. Everyone who enters this space, I love. Not being to being, not out of separateness. It's just I am in love with them. We exist in love together. I'm touching that place inside of me I've never looked at before, a place I never knew. He went on to say that all this singing and dancing and all the plaudits and all the praise and all the money never really brought such a deep satisfaction as he was experiencing now. And that is what is outside of the seemingly locked whack-a-mole room of our mind. What he said, I think the most important line in there is what he said was that I'm not in love with them. We are in the field of love together. And then he went on to say, I'm touching a place of freedom that I didn't even know existed. So you are hearing that truth. That right outside of our resistance to our pain and our suffering is a whole nother world. And the word that Aaron uses for it is the word that I use for it, love, with a capital L. So have the courage to say hello to your pain, or to at least just notice when you're turning away. And when you can, baby step by baby step, turn towards and discover the freedom that is your birth. Thank you for listening. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.